Welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, hosted by the Contracts and Fiscal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School. This podcast is for the federal government attorney navigating the complex intersection of acquisitions and fiscal law and policy. I am your host, Major Ellie Sewell.
And I'm Major Ed Callahan.
And together we are your co-hosts. On this episode of Far and Beyond, we're going to be discussing AI hallucinations. And today we have two special guests with us.
I'm Erica Whalen-Retta. I'm the Chief of Bid Protest for the Air Force. I work in the Commercial Litigation Field Support Center at Joint Base Andrews.
And I'm Robert Neal. I'm the Chief of Bid Protest in the U.S. Army Legal Services Agency's Contract Litigation and Intellectual Property Division.
Thank you both for joining us today. So I think this should be an interesting conversation since we've been seeing more and more from specifically GAO about AI hallucinations in some of the documents they've been receiving. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Sure, I guess I'll start. It's really AI use in doing legal research, and you know, AI is coming up with cases that either don't exist or they cite the wrong case for the wrong, you know, for something that it didn't stand for, or they're just making up case law and coming up with quotes to cases that don't exist. At least that's been the Air Force's experience.
And in the Army, what we've seen is primarily pro se bid protests that we describe it as like bear the hallmarks of having been prepared using ChatGPT or AI. And we've seen this now this year in 2025, really, as the first time that we've seen this happening a lot. And I have to say that the first instance that we saw it, we had two majors who just had returned from ILE, where they had learned some really great use cases for AI. And they walked in and said, this bid protest looks like it's been prepared by AI. Look, it has these blue bold-faced headings. It has very consistent logical organization, and each point is supported by three bullet points.
Yeah, we, as instructors here at the schoolhouse, we are kind of briefed on the same things to watch out for when we're receiving paperwork. I don't see it coming through our students here at TJAGLIX, but talking to people at almost any other university level, this is a growing problem in any of their students coming through. So I can't say as though I'm terribly surprised to hear. And both of you in your presentation yesterday were excellent in talking about this topic, which is why we're thrilled that you're here following up with it. But I'm curious, when you're looking at these, and you had mentioned, sir, that it's pro se litigants or pro se complaints that you're seeing this with, how obvious is it? Does that change kind of your way of reviewing pro se versus firm versus now everybody? Has it created a more robust checks and balances or check system within your organizations?
For the Air Force, we're seeing it mostly from pro ses. And I have to say, it has changed how I look at protests when they first come in, because I'm the first person who has eyes on our protests. So I just go through, especially the pro ses, and look at, one, are they citing case law? Because a lot of them don't. And when they do, then I follow up and actually check the sites to see if they actually exist. I'd say we've only had one instance where we had one that was definitely AI, that was sites that just weren't even there. We couldn't find them anywhere.
It's so easy to verify in the fact that you couldn't verify at all that these existed. Sir, do you see the same thing over a clip?
Yes, and like we've seen a number of pro se protests, I would say five or six this year. And sometimes it'll show up not in the initial protest, but we'll file a request to dismiss a protest. And then almost as if by magic, 1 hour later, the pro se protester will file a 6-page or 10-page response, and you know, which raises eyebrows, right? And so what we've been doing is routinely running the case citations through Lexis, which has a tool that allows you to check the citations in the filings. If it's something that contains proprietary information, we're sensitive about putting that into some sort of a outside tool. But those can easily be, we can extract the citations and then put the citation list through the tool to check the validity of the citations. But it's the hallucinations that we've been seeing have not been limited to pro se filers. And with attorney filers, it's difficult to tell. I mean, that some of them are, you know, won't necessarily tell you, oh, well, I used AI to prepare my protest. But it has some of the same suspicious characteristics that we see. There'll be a logical argument, but the facts won't match with the argument. The argument is, you know, wonderful. It lays out a great case for their position, but then they'll have random facts in there that don't fit with the argument, which is
that's interesting.
So it's really, you sort of mentioned this already, but you're seeing mostly quotes that don't exist or cases just that don't exist. And then you said sometimes they're just completely misrepresenting the holding or the standing of the case. Mm-hmm. So that seems to be, those are the three types of hallucinations, I guess I'd call it.
Right. We've seen, in my mind, it's as if the hallucinations that we've seen have three elements to them. There's the case name, the B number or the citation for a GAO bid protest, and then the holding or a direct quote. So some information that's purported to have come from this case. And it seems as though the tools that these protesters are using will take something from column one, something from column two, and something from column three, and then just sort of randomly match them up.
So that's interesting. So it's not always, one of the examples you had given, but it's not always a clearly fabricated out of whole cloth. Sometimes it is a real citation, or it is a real case, or it is a real holding, but the three don't match up together, which creates a little bit of more work, I would imagine, on your agency's end to try and look into that.
Definitely. I know that the case that we had essentially all of that in one case, where initially the protester just cited case law. They didn't say what they were citing it for or anything, but they just cited case law in their protest. None of those cases existed. We filed our request for dismissal, arguing in part that they'd used AI. But we had other bases for dismissal, and it ended up being dismissed on the other grounds. But protester responded to our request for dismissal, didn't address the AI issue at all, but included more case law. Two of the cases we couldn't find at all. One we could find, but had nothing to do with what the protest was about. And at that point, GAO came back and said, you know, protester, you cite a number of cases in your protest and your response to the request for dismissal. Please provide pin sites for those cases.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So they came back and provided pin sites and direct quotes from some of the cases. Still, none of it actually existed.
Wow. It's a bold response to come out and double down.
I know, doubling down on that. Whew.
So I'm curious, when you're filing these, say, motions dismissed based on, you know, completely fabricated claims, or I don't know, do you cite use of AI, or are you sticking to as if AI didn't exist, but you're still just making up facts or making up precedent?
We cited use of AI in ours.
Okay.
And cited I forget what the case was, the first one that came out.
Well, there was the Sanders versus United States case in the Court of Federal mm-hmm. Claims. In that case, I know when we had a discussion, Erica and I, when we first started seeing this, and we had put together kind of a template for a motion to dismiss. So when we would see one of these cases, how could we dispose of it quickly so that our trial attorneys don't end up wasting their time,
sure,
and our clients don't end up wasting their time putting together a time-consuming agency report to respond to something that's based on nothing. So we kind of looked at what precedent was out there and came up with a template motion to dismiss. And the Sanders case that I mentioned in the Court of Federal Claims, in that case, the judge looked at the characteristics of what the protester's counsel, or protester, I think, I can't recall whether it was a pro se case or not, but what the protester had submitted, and concluded from all those characteristics that had been irresponsibly prepared using AI. So the court inferred and essentially found that based on the characteristics of what had been filed. So we cite to that case, and now GAO then has some precedent as well that we can cite to.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that, sir. So I know GAO just came down with the first actual sanctions imposed based on this, where, ma'am, I think you would reference there were some footnotes and references, but they were dismissing on other facts along the way. Can you tell us a little bit about GAO's most recent decision, kind of the facts that maybe separated that case or ones that we can look out for in the future on that?
That's the O'Ready case, or O'Ready, O-R-E-A-D-Y.
Right, yeah. I have no idea how to pronounce it. And even after yesterday's panel, I was like, oh, they both sound right to me.
And I think for that case, the important facts that led to the sanctions, it followed the same pattern that GAO has followed. When they identify legal authority that doesn't exist, and the protester, you know, is citing to non-existent legal authority, they'll ask them to clarify it. And I think that's what they did. And then the protester responded with more fabricated legal authority.
Wow.
The first case, though, that gave us the ammunition to cite to in these motions to request to dismiss the protests was the Raven Investigations and Security Consulting LLC case. It was B number 423447, and it was issued in May 7th, 2025, and the citation's 2025 CPD paragraph 112 at 4. And that's where GAO put out the warning to all practitioners that they have an inherent right to manage the forum, and if they determine that, you know, AI use is wasting everyone's time, irresponsible AI use, I should say, irresponsible AI use is wasting everyone's time, they reserve the right to actually impose sanctions, including up to dismissal. That's the case we had been citing, I think, in our motions.
Yes, that's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, no, and I think that's an important distinction that I think we'll get to a little bit later. It's the irresponsible use that we're trying to certainly help our practitioners identify in, you know, pro se, but even sometimes in, you know, the professional legal responses to these. But to avoid doing that in our own practice, because this is a quick way, I think, to lose credibility amongst your co-counsel, opposing counsel, GAO, COFC. If you're signing your name to the bottom of just hallucinations, I don't know if anybody takes you seriously after that.
Right. And, you know, in the Raven Investigations case, interestingly, and I think in most of the other cases before the O'Ready case, GAO dismissed the protests, but for other reasons, like for failing to present factually and legally sufficient grounds of protest primarily.
So we're seeing this not just, though, at GAO. You are seeing it in COFC, because you mentioned the Sanders case. So it's not just one forum. It's starting to spread in all the forums.
I believe so. We're seeing it more at GAO just simply because there are more pro se protesters at GAO, but it's not limited to GAO. And I know our chief trial attorney, Dana Chase, has been following the Armed Services Board of Contract Appeals and how they're dealing with irresponsible hallucinations in filings with that board.
Oh, I didn't even think about that board. So they're seeing this also over there too.
Absolutely.
I know our office has had a couple of cases at the board that have involved AI usage.
Okay. Wow. So with all these hallucinations that we're seeing, what actions are the courts taking? What is GAO and COFC doing?
I think for GAO, we've seen them with the O'Ready or Reedy or however it's pronounced case, we've seen them dismiss the protest because of the irresponsible use of AI.
And I would add to that, when the issue has come up, GAO has been actively investigating. So when they spot the issue, just on their own initiative, the GAO attorneys are asking protesters to provide real case citations to real law. And they're doing that publicly, I think, to keep people aware that this is an issue that will waste their time and they don't want to deal with it.
Right.
So we're seeing that. But then they've more often than not dismissed cases for other grounds rather than just sanctioning them for irresponsible AI use.
So the O'Ready or Ready case, that is the first one that they have sanctioned specifically and dismissed for AI use?
That we're aware of, and it was an egregious case.
Well, and I imagine even the use of AI when it's irresponsible isn't going to answer all of the wickets that they expect to see anyway, so there's probably always going to be several grounds for dismissal rooted from the fact that AI doesn't know what it's doing at this level, doesn't know what a proper, you know, X, Y, and Z look like when they're trying to file. So they can probably find several reasons each time to dismiss, but it all roots from the same irresponsible use coming through. And one of the priorities we have here at the schoolhouse, and I think it's one of the priorities throughout the entire Department of War, is to start incorporating AI into our practice when we can, when it's a good, responsible use. So I'm curious from your perspective on the receiving end of a lot of this irresponsible use, but also in trying to incorporate or looking to incorporate, do you have any practice tips for our attorneys out there who do want to use AI to try and help us get the best product possible going out, but also want to avoid over-reliance or, you know, the irresponsible use of it?
I think that it's a good tool to use to start doing your research, but, you know, check your case sites, make sure the cases actually exist.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a good tool to get the ball rolling on doing the research and the writing that's involved in defending a protest.
One of the attorneys actually in our office, she said she would take the case and she would put it in, get the holding, see if it was even worth her reading. And then if she was like, okay, yes, this will support me. So then she would go back and actually read the case. So she didn't read 15 pages, get to the end and be like, oh, wait, never mind. This is, I'd move on to the next one. So that's one way.
Sure. Yeah. So
I've heard of helpful ways. Yeah.
And to that point, like being able to use it for the research part of it is great. And I would imagine a force multiplier. It certainly has been in my time, saving so much time in the research part of it. But the drafting part of it, be very careful, right? This is when we're getting into, as we heard many times yesterday, the human in the loop question, right? You want to make sure that you're in there and drafting in a work product that you as an attorney can put your signature on the bottom of. Sir, over at Clip, how are you seeing, addressing, or thinking about dealing with this?
We're still investigating that, and I know we recently got some licenses to use the Lexis product that has AI so that we can better understand how we can use it to our advantage in this practice. But meanwhile, we have been looking at how we can use it to help. Just very recently, as a concrete example, we have had a protest of a sole source election. And so an attorney was able to take the public version of the sole source justification document and ask AI to analyze it for weaknesses in the arguments. It identified several things. It provided some legal case citations that were suspect, but it gave the trial attorney a starting point to look, focus research on those areas to see what the standards are, you know, how best to defeat them.
That's a great one. I hadn't even thought of. So not even use at the beginning, but use at the end to double check the product that's going out, to double check, you know, how we're phrasing and what we're putting public facing to help avoid bid protests in the future.
Yeah, well, that's in our business. That's where we come in at the end.
Right,
we're defending things that have already been done.
They call us when something goes wrong. Not before it goes wrong, after it goes wrong. Speaking to, that's a great use, I think, to help. It's almost like another set of eyeballs, you know, on the product before it goes out. I know I like to use it for grammar. I'm like, take away all the passive voice or having it definitely check for weaknesses, I think that can be a tool, I think, that can be useful going forward.
Yeah, I've used it to like draft a strong introductory paragraph, for example.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And just to provide format tips and things.
Create an introductory sentence for this paragraph.
Yes.
I've used it a few times for that.
And I think a big takeaway that I'm getting from all this, too, is probably one that we all learned when we went through law school and had to go through and shepherdize our first cases, you know, back, at least when I went through, it was in the library, it was with the book, right? If you're going to use AI, which recommend that everybody start bringing it into their practice, at no point should you just rely on the case citations, right? Don't even do that when you're pulling up an old sample that you're using as the template when you're going through. Make sure the law is still current. Make sure the case is still valid. So I think that's just a good practice tip in general, but certainly becoming more and more relevant as AI is kind of generating these out of whole cloth or misinterpreting or, as you said, sir, just combining from the three categories at will.
And, one of the constraints on us in using AI that we're trying to figure out how to deal with is in bid protests, we end up having in our records a lot of information that's provided by contractors in confidence to the government.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's difficult we have to know what is the large language model, for example, going to do with this information? Could it, if we use AI, could it leak this proprietary information out to others? And so that's, we're having to look at that in to inform how we can best use AI in our practice.
Yeah, and that's a huge topic that they talked about a lot yesterday through our different presenters. And I know Gen AI is the big one at the Department of War right now. But as attorneys, we have to be careful. Just because it can handle CUI level does not mean it can handle attorney work product, right? These are right. Different mm-hmm. privileges classifications that we have to watch out for. I know Ask Sage in the Army, that was a big one that we were using for a while, but that had the same constraints. These things, as of right now, my understanding, and any one of our seven listeners can correct me if I'm mistaken on this, but we're not able to put in a lot of that privileged information because it just doesn't have that level of protection on it.
Hi, Mom.
Yeah.
I would just say it is a new world. And we saw that AI is like Time Magazine's Person of
That's
the Year
right.
this
yep.
year.
Yep.
I mean, it has definitely had an impact on our practice. I think if we don't learn how to use it and to use it effectively, we will be left behind.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, I agree. We need to learn how to use it and use it right.
Because it can be such a force multiplier in what is sure at every level right now. Everybody is overworked and doing two or three different jobs, and our portfolios keep getting larger. And certainly you put up all the statistics. It's not like bid protests are going down, right? And at best, they're staying the same as they go through. So as useful as these can be, can really help, I think, make our lives easier and make us a stronger organization for it, because they're certainly using it on the other side, right? So we can't allow them to have this tool that's going to lap us if we're not paying attention.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is saving them time, I can guarantee.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today and talking about AI hallucinations and all the joy that is bringing you in your practice right now. So with that, thank you for joining us today on this episode of Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
We really appreciate hearing from all of our listeners here at the New Developments Course. We've had the opportunity to talk to several of you, and we really appreciate all the feedback. Stay in touch. Let us know if there are areas you want us to talk about or issues you want us to dive into. And follow us on LinkedIn and all of the other platforms. Keep an eye on today's show notes for case references and citations.
The views expressed today are those of the presenters, not that of the Judge Advocate General Corps, the Department of the Army, the Department of the Air Force, or the Department of War.